Hello there. Today is Thursday, January the 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the battle over Obamacare.
For years, they've talked about repeal, but for 5 years now, they have had nothing to put in its place.
Donald Trump continues to dispute U.S. intelligence findings on Russian hacking. A washing machine that folds clothes, just one of the millions of items at the annual Consumer Electronics Show. Also ahead, a new year, a new feel-good movie.
In my top 10 for 2016.
It's all on today's International Edition. Well, in a clash of current and future administrations, President Obama went to Congress on Wednesday hoping to preserve his signature health care law, while Vice President-elect Mike Pence visited the Capitol to solidify a Republican agenda that will take aim at Obama's legacy once Donald Trump becomes president later this month. The dueling appearances brought a highly unusual spectacle. The leader of an outgoing administration and a principal of the incoming administration lobbying lawmakers at the same time to diametrically opposed ends. Obama didn't speak with reporters, but Pence reaffirmed his party's intention to get rid of Obamacare.
But the first order of business is to repeal and replace Obamacare. And that was our message today, and it'll be our message on Capitol Hill. And it needs to be done.
House and Senate Democrats emerged from a closed-door presidential pep talk saying they were heartened and determined to fight core principles and beliefs long after Obama leaves office on January 20th. Here's Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
The Republican plan to cut health care wouldn't make America great again, it would make America sick again and lead to chaos instead of affordable care.
The Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, has broadened the opportunities for Americans to buy private health care insurance and dramatically reduced the number of people who lack coverage. While eager to make good on a campaign promise, Republicans have yet to agree on a detailed plan for replacing it or when that would be revealed. And rather than replacing Obamacare, Democrats say Republicans should work with them to preserve and improve the law. Failure to do so, according to Democrats, means Republicans will be fully and solely responsible for any negative consequences going forward. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. To LGBT activists, Obama will always be a champion. Dozens injured in a New York City train derailment. Charleston church shooter tells the jury he's psychologically fine. And Turkey moves to block internet access. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Well, 2 days before he will receive a highly anticipated intelligence briefing, President-elect Donald Trump is continuing to question the view that Russia meddled in the presidential election by hacking confidential information and leaking it selectively before Americans voted last month. In a string of Twitter comments Wednesday, Trump asked why the Democratic National Committee was so careless that hackers could copy thousands of emails. The president-elect also quoted WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange saying Russians didn't give him the info. Democratic Senator Patrick Leahy has denounced Trump's comments.
It is totally irresponsible for somebody who's going to be commander-in-chief to be, in a simplistic way, trying to put doubts on everything that we've done, doubts on what our nuclear policy is, doubts on what our advices and our intelligence that we share with a lot of our NATO and other allies. It's almost inconceivable. If I can only imagine the reaction you would hear from the Republicans if a Democrat did anything that irresponsible.
A U.S. official confirms to VOA the intelligence community's review of potential foreign interference in the U.S. elections is complete. President Obama will be briefed on the matter later today, with Trump to receive the same briefing on Friday. Joining me now, national security law professor at George Mason University, Jamil Jaffer. So thanks for being with us. And what do you think of Donald Trump's latest comments seeming to agree with WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange?
I think Speaker Paul Ryan had it right, which is, you know, Julian Assange is a person who takes classified information, leaks it publicly, does it without regard to national security, and is not somebody to be praised. And, you know, I think that's pretty straightforward. You know, I don't take a lot of what Julian Assange says with a lot of seriousness, and I don't think most people should.
So would you say that making statements like that about the U.S. intelligence agency and sort of going in line with praising the founder of WikiLeaks, would you say that that's sort of careless?
I wouldn't say that President Trump has praised the founder of WikiLeaks. I think what he did was he said, look, Julian Assange says the Russians didn't give it to him. In fact, what Julian Assange said was he didn't get the material from a state party. Well, as we know, the Russians regularly use proxies to do their dirty work. So it wouldn't be surprising if Russians, as do many states, by the way, use proxy groups to do their dirty work. That's number one. Number two, Julian Assange doesn't know who he got it from because he WikiLeaks allows you to submit stuff anonymously. I mean, that's right. Kind of the idea behind WikiLeaks. And so the whole notion that Julian Assange knows whether it was a state party or doesn't know and knows that it wasn't the Russians, I mean, you know, this is all sort of, you know, it's sort of speculation, piled upon speculation, piled upon speculation. And I think it's going too far to say the president praised Julian Assange. I think what he said was, Julian Assange says this, you know, the intelligence community said that. He also did, by the way, it's worth, I think, noting, the president did say that we would hear Tuesday or Wednesday and we'd learn why he thinks the intelligence community is wrong. As far as I know, we haven't heard that yet. Now, maybe he's waiting to sort of disclose what he knows until he gets the intelligence community's briefing on Friday, so I guess, or maybe he'll learn more there and maybe he'll come around to a different view. It's important to note, I think, that he hasn't had that briefing yet. Still relevant, I think, if you know, you've got the president saying one thing, you've got the president saying something else, I think it's important that they both have the same information. That doesn't appear to be the case here.
He's certainly been invited to have as many briefings as he would like, and it doesn't sound like he's really been all that willing to get that many briefings. He's contradicted everything 17 different intelligence agencies have come out and said, that Russia is responsible for this, and he just continues to dispute that without any evidence to the contrary. So wouldn't he be guilty as well of not revealing whatever the so-called information that he has that none of our intelligence agencies have?
I think it's a very fair point. I think it's fair to say the president said he has some special information, some different information. He said he'd reveal it Tuesday or Wednesday. He hasn't done that yet. So I think everyone's interested to hear, I think the government probably more than anybody else, the intelligence community more than anybody else, is really interested to hear what it is that the president-elect knows. So I think we'll wait and find out what that is. In the meantime, though, I do think it's important that the president-elect have the same information the president and his administration has, that Congress has the same information they have. It looks like Congress is now getting that. That's good. Sounds like the president-elect, whether it's because he didn't want to take the briefings, which is fair, I think fair to criticize him for, or that he's getting the briefing delayed, either way, he's now going to get the briefing on Friday, so we'll know more, and I think we'll see what he says after that. He has been very skeptical, and I think it is going to be a challenge for this intelligence community if, in fact, the president is this skeptical of them and they don't have credibility. There is not trust between the president of the United States, and the reality is Donald Trump is the president now and will be the president on January 20th, and the intelligence community is going to be there, and they will have to brief him. Regardless of who's at fault, they need to have the trust of the president, and the president needs to be able to trust them. Otherwise, this whole process of getting intelligence and getting into the process and collecting it and making it relevant to policymakers is not going to be successful. And that is a critical part of our national security apparatus. So the president needs to figure out how he can trust the intelligence community. The intelligence community needs to figure out how it can provide information that he can rely on and trust. And look, I think there's one other thing to say about what's been revealed publicly to date. You know, the president had DHS and the FBI issue this report last week. The report is very helpful in the sense that it provides a series of indicators of compromise. And it's also very important, I think, in that it attributes a number of activities that have long been rumored to be associated with the Russian government, including Black Energy and Havex, Dragonfly, a variety of codenamed operations or efforts or groups to the Russian government. So I think it's very important in that context. It is also fair, though, I think a fair criticism, it doesn't reveal a whole lot about why they think it was the Russians. Now, that's a hard issue for the intelligence community. It always has been, because it gets into sources and methods, and it could compromise.
Yeah, they said they have the digital fingerprints.
Right, and so, but I think it's important for them to really be forthright about how they know it's the Russians, right? What is it about the digital fingerprints that make them think that? I think the president has ordered them to do more in that regard, and they're doing more, and I think they still need to do more. I think they have not convinced the president-elect, and that's a problem.
And lastly, the president-elect is also talking about really scaling back our intelligence departments, Homeland Security, CIA, making big cuts. Is that a good idea in a time like this with, you know, terrorism in the world? Could that benefit us in some way?
No, I think a major retrenchment of our intelligence community or a major reduction in our intelligence community is a disastrous move, to put it bluntly. We are in a time of dramatically growing threats. Russia is increasingly aggressive in Eastern Europe. China is increasingly aggressive in the South China Sea. Russia is more active in the Middle East. ISIS is very active both in the Syria-Iraq region and abroad in Europe and trying to do stuff here in the United States, and al-Qaeda still remains a threat. In this time of heightened threat, the notion that we should reduce our intelligence collection or reduce the amount of staffing or the budget for intelligence community, I think, is a huge mistake. We saw this happen, by the way, with the so-called peace dividend in the Clinton administration, where we dramatically scaled back our intelligence collection apparatus. It depends on how you connect it, but 9/11 happened. And you can attribute that to a failure to understand the intelligence, a failure to share information. But a lot of it, if you look at the 9/11 Commission report, the WMD Commission report, a lot of that was attributed to our reduction in human intelligence collection as a result of the so-called peace dividend. And so I think it would be a major error, particularly at a time of heightened threat, to reduce our resources and our staffing and our emphasis on the intelligence community. If we need to fix trust, that's one thing. But reducing resources and reducing staffing would be a disastrous mistake.
All right. National security expert Jamil Jaffer, thanks so much for your time and expertise. President Obama, with less than 2 weeks left in office, gave one final address to U.S. military personnel Wednesday with a visit to Joint Base Meyer-Henderson Hall in Arlington, Virginia. He thanked them for their service and sacrifice and said being their commander-in-chief was the greatest honor of his life and made him a better man.
My optimism about America going forward is in part because we have such an amazing military, not only one that knows how to fight, but also knows how to uphold the values of rule of law and professionalism and integrity.
Obama and the First Lady will reportedly be hosting a star-studded final White House bash on Friday. You're listening to International Edition.
News happens around the clock. And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
VOA's International Edition continues now, turning to what's trending on social media. We are joined by the lovely and talented G. Abby Lee. Hey, G.
Hey, Lori.
So what do you got for us today?
The word of the day is dabbing.
What? What's that?
I had to look at what it is, too. And I've seen it before, but wasn't quite sure what the meaning behind it is. And it seems like there really isn't any profound meaning behind the dance move.
It's a dance move, okay.
You've seen it before.
No, I haven't.
You have. It's where you drop your head while also raising an arm and the elbow.
Huh.
No?
Okay. Okay.
Well, it's the one that looks like you're sneezing. And the reason okay. why dabbing is trending Wednesday is because a U.S. politician's son tried to steal the moment during a photo op by dabbing. Kansas House Representative Roger Marshall's son tried to dab, but House Speaker Paul Ryan shut him down.
Okay, okay. I saw that. I didn't know what was going on or what he did that he stopped him from doing, but now it's all making sense. Okay.
It wasn't sneezing.
Okay.
And after the swearing-in of the 115th Congress was over, Ryan tweeted this. Just finished swearing-in photos. Nearly 300 members, countless cute kids. Still don't get what dabbing is, though.
Okay. Did you get any other reactions?
Yeah, so let me introduce this one. Dave Itzkoff, who is a culture reporter with the New York Times with a huge following on Twitter, shared a photo of Speaker Ryan looking bored while being seated behind singers Jay-Z and Beyoncé. He captioned it, "When popular culture is proudly not your thing." But according to Representative Marshall's tweet, his son got grounded for dabbing.
Oh, man. Wow. Okay.
Well, he had his moment,
I guess. Well, what else is buzzing? What are people talking about?
Hashtag CES 2017 is another trending topic, and CES is an annual trade show for consumer electronics and technology. So it's an event for big nerds.
Oh.
And nerd is a new cool, right? The best handle to follow is at CES, the official handle for this year. People are using the hashtag to share photos and thoughts from the event, and it looks like there's a washer-dryer from LG that takes care of everything from washing the clothes to folding them.
What? It folds the clothes?
Yeah.
I want one.
There are also self-driving cars and, get this, self-parking cars from Tesla. Wow. That's all for me today. Lori?
All right. Thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G Abby Lee. Well, and as G did just mention, the Consumer Electronics Show is getting underway in Las Vegas, Nevada. Joining me now from Las Vegas right this moment, Chris Morris, who reports for Forbes, CNBC, and Yahoo.com. It's an exciting day for gadget geeks like you, Chris.
You know, last year they had over almost 178,000 people showed up last year, so it's probably going to get even bigger than it was. This is a show that's been growing year over year. You have to consider, this is a show that's being held in Las Vegas, and it's not just the convention center, which is an enormous facility, but it's also being held at all the hotels along the Strip. All total, they say they're expecting 2.5 million net square feet of exhibit space at this show. So there is a lot of stuff being shown here.
What kind of stuff are we seeing? I know there's all the latest, all the big tech companies are unveiling their newest digital gadget, this, that, whatever.
Yeah, you're seeing pretty much anything that you can imagine in the tech world. A lot of new TVs, the real high-end TVs are rolling out here from people like Samsung and LG. You're seeing a lot of autonomous vehicles, like self-driving cars. That technology is kind of on the bubble. It's not quite ready for prime time yet, but we're getting close, and so you're seeing a lot of experimental stuff happening. You can look for things like drones, a lot of virtual reality, and a whole bunch of stuff for the smart home. That was a $3.5 billion industry last year. It's expected to jump by 60% this year.
Like, give us an example of smart home stuff.
There's the Nest thermostat, where you can set temperatures to go up and down during the day if you're not home. It learns your habits, and it adjusts the power input at your house. You can tell your lights to come on at 5:30 in the evening when you generally get home. So it's little things like that that you don't have to worry about, but it makes your life so much easier.
I heard about the washing machine that folds itself. I could live with that. Humans are going to be obsolete soon.
Yeah, we're just taking up space at this point, I think.
Yeah.
But it's not just washing machines that are getting smart. Also, things like your refrigerator. Last year, Samsung rolled out a refrigerator that had a screen built into it. It took off in a massive way. So this year, they've rolled out a series of new refrigerators. They have that screen, and it can do everything from tell you what's left inside your fridge right now if you need to go to the store.
Wow.
Or it can tell you, you can also will give you recipes. So if you're out cooking, your refrigerator can tell you what you need.
I would like the refrigerator to go shopping for food for me. Then I wouldn't have to go to the grocery store.
Well, that's what Amazon's for. Remember, you know, you can get the Amazon
true.
Button and just
that's
press
true.
It and reorder your food.
That's true. I understand there are also some interesting healthcare gadgets.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of what's called med tech here at the show this year. I've seen a real push for that. I think we're going to have a lot of different companies. The most interesting thing for me personally was you're seeing a lot of hearing aids. There's a battle brewing in Congress right now to allow over-the-counter hearing aid sales. Now, some people, since that hasn't happened yet, are working around the laws with the title of augmented hearing device. And basically, that adds in things like music and Bluetooth capabilities so you can talk on your phone, but it's meant to help you hear better in the world. You can focus on a certain individual as you're speaking with them. Those are selling for anywhere from $300 and up right now.
That's incredible. So were there any surprise companies that showed up?
You know, the biggest surprise here at CES so far has been Carnival Cruise Lines, not someone you would expect in a technology
show.
No,
you'd think they'd be at a travel show.
Yeah, basically so. But they have worked with key members of the team that put together Disney's Magic Band program. That's where you have a little wristband that you can use to pay for your room, open your hotel door, pay for things at the park. They're going to put together something called an ocean medallion. It's the same sort of technology. Now, it'll remember your orders. It'll make suggestions based on that moving forward when you're in a cruise. Instant pay, again, open your cabin door. It's a completely frictionless experience with over 7,000 sensors around the ship. So that's something that they're hoping to revitalize the cruise industry. That's a $38 billion industry. So they're looking to kind of bump that up some as travel options become a little bit more varied for people.
All right, Chris Morris, who reports for Forbes, CNBC, and Yahoo.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Morris at Large. Thanks for being with us. The 74th Golden Globe Awards show is Sunday night at the Beverly Hills Hilton in Los Angeles, California. International Edition's David Byrd tells us that tonight's show host Jimmy Fallon will be hosting that show, which honors the best in movies, TV, and music.
2, 3... Jimmy Fallon rolled out the red carpet for the Golden Globes and said he's excited to host the show because it honors so many different parts of the entertainment industry.
This show is different than the Oscars or the Grammys, where it's kind of a mixtape of a show where it's the best in movies, the best in TV. So if you haven't seen the movie, you go like, I don't know, I never saw that, I don't even want to see that. And I go, you don't have to worry about it because this will be somebody from The Walking Dead going on stage in about 2 seconds.
The awards are presented by the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, and its 85 members have no say in nominations or voting for the Oscars. Fallon says he's not nervous about hosting the show from the Beverly Hilton Hotel.
No, doing the Tonight Show kind of is an advantage because I actually watch all these movies and all these TV shows as part of my actual normal job. So I know all the people nominated. So it's going to be fun. I don't know how they are as an audience. I hope they're good. I know how they are as guests. They're great. But it's like, who knows? They better be clapping and laughing or else they're going to hear from me when they come on my show.
Unlike the Oscars, where everyone is seated in a large theater, the Golden Globes have nominees and presenters seated at tables and eating dinner. This year, the stars will dine on sea bass and filet mignon and a choice of 3 different desserts. Beverly Hilton executive chef Alberico Nunziata says he will feed the stars as if they had come to his home.
This is the first year that an Italian is cooking for the Golden Globes. It's the first year that an Italian is the executive chef of the Beverly Hilton. And I was like really celebrating this. The idea on the back is like what we do in Italy the best. We host, I'm inviting all the celebrities at my house. And I was making something like I will make for dinner at my house if they're coming. And this was the idea on the back in reality.
And the stars will have plenty to choose from on the dessert table. Beverly Hilton executive pastry chef Thomas Henze says many times the stars do indulge, even if it means more time in the gym the next day.
They actually, I'm surprised they do, and especially that's why we like to keep the portions small. And there'll be some plates that come back clean, which is very nice to see.
Barry Adelman is the executive vice president of television for Dick Clark Productions. He says that audiences can expect some mention of the recent election, but he hopes that everyone has a good time.
Look, I think that's up to the audiences. Obviously, it was a hard-fought election, and some people were happy, some people weren't. But the Golden Globes has always been an opportunity, no matter what the year has been like, to kind of kick back and just have fun for one night, and we hope everybody does.
The 74th Golden Globe Awards air Sunday. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Well, speaking of good movies, there's a new film, big new film, just opening in U.S. theaters. Joining me now, Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard to talk more about it. Jeff, you just saw Hidden Figures. Tell us about it.
We're now in the first of the year, and we need some feel-good movies. And Hidden Figures is exactly that. And it's the story of 3 African-American ladies who worked at NASA in the 1960s. And when you think of segregation, you know, you think of the South, you think of Jim Crow, you think of all, you know, Selma, you think of all these, you know, these civil rights movements, but no one ever thought of NASA. No one ever thought that NASA was heavily segregated, that African-Americans that had the colored section, and not only that, they had their own bathrooms, they had their own, and it's just mind-blowing. So out of this story comes 3 women who were mathematicians, who were engineers. And not only just mathematicians, but the best you could find. They helped get John Glenn into orbit. They helped with the moon landing. They helped win the space race for America. And they were all math and engineers. And Kevin Costner plays the man who's in charge of the program, who eventually comes around and thinks, why are we, you know, all people who are math and science, all scientists, they don't see segregation. They don't see racism. You know, they think only in logic. So he is on their side. And then you have Jim Parsons, who feels threatened by them, and when some of these ladies, you know, start moving up the ladder, they have to use their own coffee pots. They have to use their own bathroom. So you see how success triumphs over bigotry. I mean, this is such a wonderful film and a story I've never heard of. And the real Katherine Jones, who Tara P. Henson plays in the movie, she was even given the Medal of Freedom by President Obama last year. I think she's in her 90s. So Octavia Spencer, Janelle Monáe, and my favorite, one of my stars, Mahershala Ali, you know, you're going to stand and cheer for this movie. I mean, families are going to love it. It's an uplifting story with some of the best performances of the year, and it's in my top 10 for 2016.
Wow, that's a fantastic endorsement. What about for folks who just want to stay home, cuddle up, stay warm, and don't really want to go out to the movies? I hear you've got a really good suggestion for something to watch on Netflix.
Yes, I'm late to the party on this film. It was a big hit at Sundance last year. It's been on everybody's top 10 list. It's called Sing Street. And it's an Irish film that takes us back to 1980s Dublin through the eyes of a 14-year-old boy named Connor. And there's this girl that he's in love with, and he goes up to her and says, "Look, I'm in a band. Would you like to be in the video?" And she says, "Well, of course." So he breaks the ice. One problem is he doesn't have a band. So now it's about him putting together a new wave band to get the attraction and the attention of the beautiful Rafina. And it's written and directed by John Carney, and he cast all unknowns in this movie. So all the kids really play the instruments. They write their own songs in the movie. So it's just an uplifting, really good, you know, time with just, if you're from the 80s like I am, I'm Generation X, this took me back to Duran Duran and to Hall & Oates and A-ha and all those great bands from the 80s. This is just like transporting you back. And if you're not from that era, if you're younger, you're going to absolutely love the music. So this is one of the best films of the year. Absolutely. It's called Sing Street.
Jeffrey K. Howard. You can find his full video reviews at VegasFilmCritic.com. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at VOAnews.com. We thank you for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have yourself a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. government, through the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, has provided critical scholastic materials for an estimated 2.8 million boys and girls throughout Ethiopia. USAID's efforts were aimed at protecting vulnerable children's right to education, following one of the worst droughts in Ethiopia in more than 50 years. More than 8.2 million exercise books have been distributed to the most drought-affected districts in the country. In addition, USAID delivered more than 5.5 million pens and pencils to affected schools and communities. USAID contracted Yekatit Paper Converting PLC, a local Ethiopian publishing company, as well as a small business in the United States, to quickly procure and deliver these materials for Ethiopia's most affected students in grades 1 to 8. The Ministry of Education and regional education bureaus played key roles by ensuring the delivery of these materials to local schools. With these critical scholastic materials, USAID and the Ministry of Education have effectively increased students' engagement in the school system and eased the transition back to school for millions of students whose continued education was threatened due to the lingering effects of the recent drought, said USAID Ethiopia Mission Director Leslie Reed. Globally, past experience and research indicate that students who drop out of school are less likely to contribute as productive members of their communities and earn less throughout their lives while facing an increased risk of early marriage, trafficking, and child labor. USAID is one of the leading education bilateral donors in Ethiopia and works in close collaboration with a range of partners to reach 15 million Ethiopian children with improved educational services. The United States is proud to work with its partner, Ethiopia, to help provide the children of Ethiopia the materials they need for the quality education they deserve.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials. Thank you.
is for, what's